Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading today from the 6th canto, chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chichiketu. Today reading text number 9. Sri Shuku Vacha Bhagavanapita Trutva Prahasyagada Dirnirpa Tushnim Babuva Sadasi Sabhyaschatad Anuvrataha Vishugu Vacha Bhagavanapi Tatrutva Prahasyagada Dirnirpa Tushnim Babuva Sadasi Sabhyaschatad Anuvrataha Sri Shuku Vacha Bhagavanapi Tatrutva Prahasyagada Dirnirpa Tushnim Babuva Sadasi Shavyashchatar Anuvrataha Mataji's, please. Sri Shuku Vacha, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Bhagavan, Lord Shiva, Api, also, Tat, that, Shrutva, hearing, Prahasya, smiling, Agada Dihi, whose intelligence is unfathomed. Nripa, O King, Tushnim, silent, Babhuva, remained, Sadasi, in the assembly, Sabhyaha, everyone assembled there, Cha, and Tat Anuvrataha, followed Lord Shiva, remained silent. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Lushruga Goswami continued, "My dear King, after hearing Chitraketu's statement, Lord Shiva, the most powerful personality, whose knowledge is fathomless, simply smiled and remained silent. And all the members of the assembly followed the Lord by not saying anything." Purport. Chitraketu's purpose in criticizing Lord Shiva is somewhat mysterious and cannot be understood by a common man. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, however, has made the following observations. Lord Shiva, being the most exalted Vaishnava and one of the most powerful demigods, is able to do anything he desires. Although he was externally exhibiting the behavior of a common man and not following etiquette, such actions cannot diminish his exalted position. The difficulty is that a common man, seeing Lord Shiva's behavior, might follow his example. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.21, Yadyara acharati sheshtas tatare evetarojanaha siyad pramanam kurute lokastaranuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. A common man might also criticize Lord Shiva like Daksha, who suffered the consequences for his criticism. King Chitraketu desired Lord Shiva cease this external behavior so that others might be saved from criticizing him and thus becoming offenders. If one thinks that Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the only perfect personality, whereas the demigods, even such demigods as Lord Shiva, are inclined to improper social affairs, he is an offender. Considering all this, King Chitraketu was somewhat harsh in his behavior with Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, who is always deep in knowledge, could understand Chitraketu's purpose, and therefore he was not at all angry. Rather, he simply smiled and remained silent. The members of the assembly surrounding Lord Shiva could also understand Chitraketu's purpose. Consequently, following the behavior of Lord Shiva, they did not protest. Instead, following their master, they remained silent. If the members of the assembly thought that Chitraketu had blasphemed Lord Shiva, they would certainly have left at once, blocking their ears with their hands. Om Gyanati Maranda Syaganandana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namam Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shimate Paladananda Swangitone Namam Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shimate Bhakti Padanta Swangitone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunivati Paschiyati Adi Shitarne. So the Bhagavatam is so nice. Every time reading it, it's just like a river of nectar. So many wonderful instructions, so many fantastic pastimes. What's being mentioned here in the purport actually corresponds nicely with something that I heard in one of Prabhupada's classes that we heard. I think it was not this last Sunday, but the Sunday prior. Prabhupada was actually making a pretty far-out statement. He was saying that he was talking about anartas. And he was mentioning how we can engage any anarta in Krishna's service. Which is pretty amazing, actually. And that's one amazing thing about this mystical process of bhakti yoga. It's very wide open. There's a lot of possibility. There's a lot of things that are possible for devotees. Like Prabhupada, for instance, he gives the example of, you know, using airplanes and dictaphones in Krishna's service. People would criticize him, "Oh, Swamiji, why are you flying an airplane? Why are you driving in a Rolls Royce? You should be walking. You're in the renounced order of life." And Prabhupada says, "No, these things are available. So we should utilize this automobile for driving very fast for Krishna's service. Prabhupada made the distinction that it's not that we condemn this so-called material advancement. No, it's there, so we utilize it in Krishna's service. But at the same time, we don't think that that's the end goal, that that's the whole purpose for civilization, for life. So in this way, devotional service, it's very flexible. It's very accommodating. Anyone, no matter how far along they are in their proportionate spiritual realization, can engage in devotional service according to their ability and their capabilities of surrender. But at the same time, just because there's so much facility given for engaging in Krishna service doesn't mean that people should take advantage of that. Like in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada, he's explaining about Yukta Vairagya. He's giving the example in there about using different machines. He says, for instance, we're using many machines for the advancement of our present Krishna consciousness movement. Machines like typewriters, dictaphone machines, tape recorders, microphones, and airplanes. Sometimes people will ask, why are you utilizing material products if you condemn the advancement of material civilization? But actually, we do not condemn. We simply ask people do whatever they are doing in Krishna consciousness. He says a little bit later, our vision is that Krishna is everything. Krishna is the cause and effect, and nothing belongs to us. Krishna's things must be used in the service of Krishna. That is our vision. That's real Yukta Vairagya. It's the real understanding of the nature of this material world and how we operate, how we interact with it. We should see that everything is Krishna's. It all belongs to Krishna. Therefore, we should use it all in Krishna's service. But Prabhupada continues by making a very, very important point on this, though. This does not mean, however, that we should give up the principles of discharging devotional service or neglect abiding by the rules and regulations prescribed therein. In the neophyte stage of devotion, one must follow all the principles regulated by the authority of the spiritual master. The acceptance and rejection of things should always be in pursuance of the devotional principles, not that one can independently manufacture some idea of what should be accepted or rejected. The spiritual master, as the visible manifestation of Krishna, is necessary, therefore, to direct the devotee on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just because the field of bhakti yoga is so open and accommodating doesn't mean that we should neglect the basic foundation upon which spiritual life is built, namely following the rules and regulations. In fact, later on in the Nectar of Devotion, there's a whole section dedicated to further elucidating this very idea. The section is entitled Eligibility for Spontaneous Devotional Service. And it's really nice because it delineates, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. It's a brief section, so I'll just go ahead and read it because it gives a lot of really nice information. Persons desiring to follow in the footsteps of such external devotees of the Lord, such as the Rishnis and Vrindavan denizens are called Raghunuga devotees, which means that they are trying to attain to the perfection of those devotees. These Raghunuga devotees do not follow the regulative principles of devotional service very strictly, but by spontaneous nature, they become attracted to some of the eternal devotees, such as Nanda or Yashoda, and they try to follow in their footsteps spontaneously. There's a gradual development of the ambition to become like a particular devotee, and this activity is called Raghunuga. We must always remember, however, that such eagerness to follow in the footsteps of the denizens of Braja, Vrindavan, is not possible unless one is freed from material contamination. In following the regulative principles of devotional service, there is a stage called anartha nirvritti, which means the disappearance of all material contamination. Sometimes someone is found imitating such devotional love, but factually he is not freed from anarthas, or unwanted habits. It has been seen that a so-called devotee proclaims himself a follower of Nanda, Yashoda, or the gopis, while at the same time his abominable attraction for mundane sex life is visible. Such a manifestation of divine love is mere imitation and has no value. When one is actually spontaneously attracted to the loving principles of the gopis, there will be found no trace of any mundane contamination in his character. This is an extremely important point, which is also the very point of this verse that we're hearing about today. You know, that when one is actually prepared and ready, qualified for engaging in Raghunuga Bhakti, they have no more material contamination. Their hearts are purified of all these anarthas. Even in present day, there are certain so-called disciples, one in particular I can think of off the top of my head, that they do this very thing. They claim that they're on the spontaneous platform, and then they engage in abominable sexual activities. And they do it all under the plea of being in the spontaneous platform of devotional service, following in the footsteps of these pure, liberated personalities eternally situated in the spiritual world. And it's just an abomination, the activities that they're engaging in. Therefore, in the beginning, everyone should strictly follow the regulative principles of devotional service, according to the injunctions of the scriptures and the spiritual master. Only after the stage of liberation from material contamination can one actually aspire to follow in the footsteps of the devotees in Vrindavan. It is said by Srila Rupa Goswami, when one is actually liberated from material contamination, he can always remember an eternal devotee in Vrindavan in order to love Krishna in the same capacity. And developing such an aptitude, one will always live in Vrindavan, even within his mind. The purport is that if it's possible, one should go and physically be present at Brajbhumi, Vrindavan, and be engaged always in the service of the Lord, following the devotees in Brajadham, the spiritual realm of Braja. If that is not possible, however, to be physically present at Vrindavan, one can meditate anywhere upon living in that situation. Wherever he may be, one must always think about life in Brajadham and about following in the footsteps of a particular devotee in the service of the Lord. In that connection, elsewhere, Prabhupada mentions that wherever there is devotional service being performed, Krishna is there. And wherever Krishna is present, there is Vrindavan. So, factually, wherever we're genuinely performing devotional service, consciously, with our heart, then factually, that place, wherever we are, that is also Vrindavan. A devotee who is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, who is constantly engaged in devotional service, should not manifest himself even though he has attained perfection. This is very significant, this paragraph here. I'll read that sentence again, because it gives good perspective on one who has actually attained these higher levels of spiritual realization. Some people in the lower levels of spiritual realization think that, oh, you know, when I'm advanced, I can just exhibit whatever activities I want, do anything I want, and call it spontaneous devotional service. But no, that's not what Prabhupada's saying. That's not what the previous acharyas say. Prabhupada says, a devotee who is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, who is constantly engaged in devotional service, should not manifest himself, even though he has attained perfection. In other words, this devotional maturity and this proportionate spiritual realization, this is an internal process. You may be very advanced, you may be on the topmost stage of realization, but this is an internal process. These things are kept internally within yourself. It's not that you go around and just do whatever you want. Oh, well, I'm a pure devotee, I can, you know, do any abominable thing and I'm exempt from any reaction for any of this. No. The idea is that he should always continue to act as a neophyte devotee as long as his material body is there. Activities in devotional service under regulative principles must be followed even by the pure devotee. So it's not that just because you're a pure devotee, you're on the topmost platform, you are engaging in Raganuga Bhakti. But at the same time, externally, yeah, Raganuga is happening internally inside the heart. Externally, though, you're following all the rules and regulations, just like a neophyte. But when he realizes his actual position in relationship with the Lord, he can, along with the discharging of regulative service, think within himself of the Lord, under the guidance of a particular associate of the Lord, and develop his transcendental sentiment in following that associate. In this connection, we should be careful about the so-called Siddha Pranali. The Siddha Pranali process is followed by a class of men who are not very authorized and who have manufactured their own way of devotional service. They imagine that they have become associates of the Lord simply by thinking of themselves like that. This external behavior is not at all according to the regulative principles. The so-called Siddha Pranali process is followed by the Prakriti Sahajya, a pseudo-sect of so-called Vaishnavas. In the opinion of Rupa Goswami, such activities are simply disturbances to the standard way of devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami says that learned acharyas recommend that we follow the regulative principles even after the development of spontaneous love for Krishna. According to the regulative principles, there are 9 departmental activities as described above, and one should specifically engage himself in the type of devotional service for which he has a natural aptitude. For example, one person may have a particular interest in hearing. Another may have a particular interest in chanting. Another may have a particular interest in serving in the temple. So these, or any of the other 6 different types of devotional service, remembering, serving, praying, engaging in some particular service, being in a friendly relationship, or offering everything in one's possession, should be executed in full earnestness. In this way, everyone should act according to his particular taste. So that's that section. It pretty much lays it out in black and white. It makes it very clear exactly what's expected and what's required. Because even back then, back in the days of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the days of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There were so many rascals, literally just rascals, doing any nonsense activity under the banner of devotional service. Even though the field for bhakti yoga is very wide, it's very wide open, there's a lot of things that are permissible and allowed in accommodating people according to their degree of spiritual realization and their degree of material attachments. However, this sort of nonsense is not allowed. And even in the present day, there are still people performing such abominable sexual activities and other activities under the plea of devotional service, under the plea that they're following the footsteps of great liberated personalities eternally situated in the spiritual world. And that's nothing but complete delusion, their claims. So, when it's mentioned that we should always follow the rules and regulations, sometimes, especially when we're still in the conditioned state of existence, trying to follow the process of anarthanivritti, getting rid of these unwanted things within our heart, sometimes the idea of these rules and regulations can become a little bit overwhelming. Like at one point, Prabhupada said that if he gave all the rules and regulations to us, then we would faint. So it's explained that the easiest way of getting this purification is through oral reception, through hearing the message. Not only hearing through this process of coming to class, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita, but also hearing the holy names, like these two 12-hour kirtans we just had, were phenomenal. If you miss that, I feel sorry for you. I mean, honestly. It was just quite remarkable. Last night I was thinking I was going to take rest at a reasonable time. So I went to my room at 9 o'clock, and I was laying there and the holy names were just reverberating in my head. I was thinking, man, I gotta go back to the temple. I had to lock up anyway, so, you know, I stayed here till midnight last night, and it was just incredible. Ajamil, Sarvajai, and Amala Kirtan, they did a solid 3-hour collaboration at the end. The three of them, they were all passing off the mic. They would each take turns leading a round of kirtan. And it was just incredible. It was just completely mesmerizing. Even though your body was physically exhausted, you're tired. But still, just the sound of those holy names was sustaining you. It was keeping you awake. You weren't nodding off. Even though you could just feel the exhaustion and fatigue in your body, but still, you felt enlivened, you felt blissful. So all the way up until midnight, at midnight there were still 70 devotees in the temple room. I counted. It was incredible. You know, at the peak, you know, between like 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock at night, there was hundreds of devotees in the temple. It was packed. And it was fantastic. You know, this is factually the easy way, the very easy way of achieving spiritual perfection. Not only that, but it does so many things. You know, by chanting together, it brings us together. Chanting the Maha Mantra, it levels the playing field. So many people, they may think they have so many differences of opinion. Oh, I don't like this person. Oh, I do like that person. Oh, I can't get along with this person. But when we chant the Maha Mantra, it levels all that. It dissolves all those barriers. And so we're all blissfully sitting together, sitting next to the very person that you think you can't stand their activities. And all that, it just dissolves away. And you're just chanting the Maha Mantra together, blissfully absorbed in the sounds of the Holy Name. When I did finally go to sleep last night, the whole time in my dreams, I just heard the Maha Mantra. I woke up still hearing it reverberating inside my head. It's so fantastic. You know, and as fantastic as it is to have this kirtan here also, it's equally as fantastic to go out and share those holy names too. Like, for instance, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur called the distribution of transcendental literature, he called it the Brihat Murdanga. So as blissful as last night was, as the night before that was, it's also equally, if not more blissful, going out there sharing these holy names in the forms, the solidified manifestation of these holy names in the form of these books. Like, we just finished the Prabhupada Marathon. And I actually felt, you know, very grateful to Subhash Prabhu for allowing me to sneak out there. It was very nice. You know, it's like doing that favorite activity that you know will always give you bliss. It's tough. I'm not going to deny that. Distributing books is a very difficult activity. But it's so rewarding. The thing for me that makes it so rewarding is meeting conditioned souls who truly appreciate what they're being offered. And they're so appreciative and so grateful for being given the opportunity. Every day I was going downtown, pretty much for the whole month, every single day I'd meet about a dozen people giving basically the same response, saying, you know, thank you so much, you know, for stopping and talking to me. This is exactly what was just on my mind literally 30 seconds ago, just before I came around the corner and saw you. I was just having a spiritual epiphany that I need to take my spiritual life seriously. Or, you know, I was just feeling a tremendous lack in my heart and I need some spirituality in my life. Or I'm going through so much difficulty right now and I really need to ground myself. It's no coincidence. I don't believe in luck. It's no coincidence that we met. It was meant for us to meet. It was meant for me to get this book from you. And just, you know, incredible reactions like that. And it just completely just blows your mind away. And you're filled with spiritual ecstasy. So in this way, these activities of preaching Krishna consciousness, you know, engaging other people and chanting the holy names. Because even, you know, these people who would be so into it. One thing I was doing that I learned from Bhrigupati is I would teach them the whole mantra, because I would explain to them about the nature of the books. I would tell them, you know, these books are just straight, pure philosophy. Because meditation itself is just like a vehicle. Meditation by itself isn't worth very much. Like, for instance, if you go in your car and you sit in your car, you think, okay, wow, I got a nice car. And you're just sitting there, you know, what's the use? What's the use of having a nice car? You don't even know where to go. But by understanding the philosophy, you can understand where you want to go and why you want to get there. And that's what the books are for. The vehicle of meditation, it can take you places, but unless you know where you want to go, it's not so much value. So they really appreciated that. And then I would teach them the Maha Mantra. Of course, the Maha Mantra isn't some regular meditation. And even without knowing any philosophy, the Maha Mantra will still take them to the highest location because it's directly Krishna's names. That's the difference between Nam and Mantra. Just an ordinary mantra will just take you to some mundane location. But the Maha Mantra is the greatest of all mantras because it's actually Krishna Nam. It's actually directly Krishna's holy names. And it'll take you back to the lotus feet of Krishna. So I would teach them the Maha Mantra. I'd have them repeat after me. And then once they repeated it, then I'd have them say the whole thing on their own. I'd show them about chanting on beads. And when I would do that, it would bring so much bliss. I remember when Bhrigu first told me about this, he was doing it in the airport. And he even Bhrigu was just shocked, even though he'd done it years ago in the past on like Radha Damodar, just get people to say Hare Krishna. But this is taking it one step further, having them say the whole Maha Mantra and showing them how it goes on the beads. And Bhrigu was saying, this is the most incredible thing, teaching people this Maha Mantra after they get the book and give a donation. It's just like icing on the cake. It just puts you and the other person in spiritual bliss. And it's just so wonderful. I recommend it. If you haven't experienced this, I recommend every one of you go out there and try it. You know, it's a simple thing. All it requires is that wherever you go, just carry one book with you. One book goes in the purse, goes in the pocket, and just carry it with you when you're going about your regular daily activities. It's not a very difficult thing. And just on your regular, ordinary, everyday activities, you're bound to meet someone. Oh, hey, you know, why are you dressed like this? Or what's that thing on your head? You know, people are going to ask. They're going to be curious. Or even they're going to say, you know, wow, so many people mentioned this to me when I was downtown. Wow, you have such an amazing, like, energy about you. Or, you know, just different comments like this. You know, what's going on? Because as devotees, there's a difference between a devotee and between, like, a karmi. And people can tangibly feel this. And people are going to ask, hey, you know, who are you? What's going on? What are you doing? Oh, well, you know, by the way, here, look at one of these. And then pull out that book that you have on you. Explain about the book. Explain about the Maha Mantra. It's a very easy process. It doesn't require you going out of your way. It's not this really difficult thing and, oh, somehow I have to get out there and, you know, make my effort and... No, you'll overwhelm yourself with what a big thing it seems like in your mind. Mentally, it's too oppressing in your mind. Rather, just keep a book and just pull it out when the situation arises. And you'll be surprised. You know, just by doing that, you'll probably distribute more books than many of the whole temples here in North America. If you just do that one simple activity. So it's a fantastic opportunity. It's open for everyone. please take advantage of this opportunity for spiritual ecstasy for your own sake, if not for others. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Jai. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.